You're listening to the TriStar State, a podcast about Tennessee politics. Earlier this week, we aired a profile of incoming House Speaker Glenn Cassida. The position gives the Franklin Republican broad powers to shape the direction of the state legislature on everything from what bills come up for votes to how lawmakers investigate and police misconduct. In this bonus interview with Cassida, he speaks with WPLN political reporter Sergio Martinez Beltran about his plans for the chamber and legislation.
Thanks so much for being with us today. You've probably talked to some of your colleagues already. Mm-hmm. A lot of new faces coming into the House. What are going to be your priorities, your top priorities for the next legislative session?
Well, number one, we want to continue on the trajectory that we're on, which is continue to make Tennessee economically successful. We are, without a doubt, the fastest improving economic state in the union. Low unemployment, growth of jobs, growth of income, personal income, and every measurable category. So we want to continue that first. And we also have been the fastest improving state on education. And so we want to continue the improvements, and our goal is to be the top 10 in each of those categories within 8 years. So we want to continue that. That's number one.
How do you achieve that?
Continue with low taxes, continue with reducing regulations upon individuals and upon businesses. On the education front, continue with the strict standards, rewarding teachers that do well, and let teachers teach.
You also talked about restoring some oversight committees.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that idea and why do you think it's important?
Yes. We at the time it was wise to do away with them 8 years ago, but times have changed, and so I and my other peers in the House, we frequently get questions on children and family DCS, on TIN Care, on prisons, and we have turned that over to the executive branch. And we are elected by individuals in our districts to represent them and to know to be a communication between state government and them. And we've lost that to some degree with the loss of the oversight committees. So we'll have hearings. It will put the legislator, will put the people's voice in contact and involved with those departments.
And it seems like this is one of those issues that has bipartisan support. I've already seen some of the Democrats of the House saying that they're down with this idea.
Yes, yes. I have. I've been pleased by both members, prominent members and leadership and rank and file on both parties are very interested in this.
And Leader, as you probably heard already, the Senate Executive Committee, the State Executive Committee of the Republican Party, they recently passed a resolution asking the legislature to do away with open primaries and change the system to a closed one. Have you talked to some of the folks at the SEC already, and what are your thoughts on that?
I have, and I think the state government committee will research this, study it. I think it has merit to have party affiliation. And so we're not going to close anything or we're going to say like other states do. I think it's like 30 some odd states do this. X amount of days before the election, you declare your party. And then that's where you vote when it comes that time. And then after that election, you can, if you change ideas, you change views, you can change parties. So it's party affiliation, not closing a primary. That's what I favor, and I think our state government committee will research and see what they come up with.
Do you see there's a problem with the way we have the primaries right now? I know the SEC has mentioned some cases in Williamson County from over the summer, but besides those two cases, are there any other cases, or do you see this as a trend issue?
I don't think there's a problem. I don't think there's anything wrong. It's just that both parties need a pure method to put their nominees up for the election in November. And it'll be studied, but it seems like a lot of states have come to the conclusion party affiliation is the way to do it. And we want to give enough days so that you got a chance to study which party you agree with is that upcoming election, and then you declare, I'm with that party. And so I think that's how we may approach it, and we'll go from there. But do I see a problem? No, I don't see a problem, no.
Have you thought about besides the issues that you already told me, the education being one of them,
yes.
Governor-elect Bill has talked about vouchers. Yeah. Any thoughts on potential education bills coming in the next legislative session?
You know, the governor does have a big say in the agenda of the state government. And so Governor Lee is interested in discussing, let's do something for failing schools. Children are stuck in this cycle. They're going to schools that are failing them. And so if a school is failing, defined as a certain percent is not graduating or is not doing well on the standardized test, let's do something out of the box. What does that look like today? I don't know, but I think charter schools is definitely in that toolbox. Governor Lee has advocated for vouchers in that toolbox. We'll talk about that in Education Committee, and we'll come up with something and not continue to do the same thing over and over and over again.
And this is not the first time you have run for the House speakership. 8 years ago, you ran. What motivated you to run again this time?
You know, I lost 8 years ago, and in that time, I became caucus chairman, became majority leader, and I just had a vision of where I wanted to take the House. And so with that vision combined with the speaker's spot being open, I decided to run. And so now my peers elected me as a nominee, and I'm sharing my vision with them and with the Democrats here on January 8th, where I want to see the House to go.
In your pitch to your fellow House Republicans, you told them you were going to help them win re-election. And it seems like you appreciate party, you know, you appreciate loyalty.
Yes. Yes.
They also seem like they appreciate it as well. But is there anything that would prevent you from helping a Republican to get re-elected?
Yeah, there is. I mean, we take an oath to uphold the Constitution, and we take an ethics oath that we will behave in an ethical manner. And so if members abide by those two principles, I will support them.
As you probably know, there's a lot of gossip in the Capitol.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
You had to address rumors 2 years ago when you were running for majority leader. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, what do you want to tell people about your character?
You know, I live a very open life. I'm down here and four nights a week. I'm out with members, out with people. So just watch what I do. You know, watch me in public. And I'm very public with my actions. And you don't see me hide. And so I put my life is an open life, and just watch how I live.
2 years ago, it was extramarital affairs. That were the accusations. You addressed them.
Yes.
Do you think those allegations cost you the race against Beth Harwell?
You know, I don't. I really don't. Beth, to her credit, she had a smarter strategy, and she just outworked me and thus beat me. And so I give Beth Harwell full credit for that.
This is the Me Too era as well. Mm-hmm. There has been some allegations made against some lawmakers in
yes.
this legislature.
Yes.
Many times Speaker Harwell asked them to step down.
Yes.
Ask the speaker now, if there were to be sexual allegations made against a lawmaker,
yes.
Republican or Democrat,
yes.
how are you going to handle those allegations?
One of our most sacred constitutional rights is you're innocent until proven guilty. And so there are allegations made all the time. And in our political environment, false allegations are made with the hope that a leader would be would cave and not and take an allegation over truth. So I'm going to stand on the side of truth, which is defined as you're innocent until proven guilty.
And would that be launching internal investigations if needed?
Speaker Harwell has done created an excellent organism and organization on investigating sexual harassment. So I'm going to continue that and bring that in and graft that in as part of our internal investigations. To your point,
and what is the line for you as Speaker where you will ask someone to step down? It doesn't have to be necessarily with sexual harassment,
right?
You know, but
right.
but what would be that line?
A proven violation of ethics. And that's usually, you know, it would be defined by a court of law. It's you know, you've got two or more witnesses, you've got eyewitness, you've got empirical evidence, a violation or, of course, breaking of civil or criminal law, of course.
And let's talk a little bit about your legislative record as well. you killed a Nashville ordinance that would have protected transgender folks in the city. And then you also reversed the Memphis living wage at one point as well. Yes. So do you still stand by those decisions, and why?
And I do. The most important thing is upholding the law, upholding the Constitution. And so cities do not have the constitutional authority to do those two actions. And so what is imperative is that the law reigns. So when the city does something they don't, even if I agree with it, if a city implements something that I agree with, it still has to be overturned because the state has functions. We've given some of those functions to city government, and they cannot, or county government, and they cannot operate outside of those functions.
So for those people who have criticized you on that, saying, you know, this is something that would protect certain people in the state, but like in a local level, what would you tell them?
The state law and federal law is what you need. We're all equal under the law. No matter your behavior, no matter your actions, you have a constitutional right. And so that's what protects you, is a state constitution, federal constitution, not the actions of a local government.
And as we keep talking about Nashville specifically, there were some comments you made after the election about the Community Oversight Board or the Metro's Amendment 1.
Yes.
What are the concerns you have with the COB?
I think it's the subpoena powers that have been given to that oversight board. I don't think it is legally correct. I'm also concerning with the way they drafted it because it's not equal representation. I've asked the Judiciary Committee and a couple of those members to look at this, come up with a template. I've asked them not to overturn the Nashville board. Let's come up with a system so that all the cities, if they choose to, can have an oversight board, but it's the same from Memphis to Mountain City.
And who did you ask for that?
I've asked both. William Lamberth will take the lead, who's also a majority leader, but he's a practicing attorney, and he's got one or two that will help him study this and come up with a template for these oversight boards for the whole state.
And you said you were a little concerned with the subpoena powers.
Yes.
Is there also some concerns? Well, I kind of want to ask you in detail that. Can you go into detail with those specific concerns?
To a point, I don't know if we want an oversight board having subpoena powers. A lot of attorneys that I've talked to, independent of Nashville and independent of the legislature, they have concerns. They don't think it's proper authority for that oversight board. And then the way it's constituted, it doesn't seem to be equal representation. In other words, the whole county doesn't seem to be equally represented either by population or geography. And an oversight board, state legislature, oversight board has to be based on population, not on any other reason, not on any other thing. So those are two things that caused me, as a non-attorney, those are two things that caused me to take a second look.
And to clarify, you haven't asked to overturn that.
Correct. I've asked William not. Let's come up with something that does not overturn it.
Are you expecting that potentially other cities across the state would start voting on creating these COBs?
I think there's three in existence right now, I've actually looked at Knoxville's in a limited way. And Knoxville looks pretty good. So we're going to look at what Knoxville has done and see if that's a good template for the state.
And let's talk about Williamson County
becoming
the powerhouse of the Republican Party in a certain way. I mean, we have you have you.
Yep.
We have Governor-elect Lee.
Yeah.
We also have Senator Jack Johnson, now the majority leader.
Yes.
And we also have the first female U.S. Senator for Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn, all from Williamson County.
Yes.
What are people eating in Williamson County?
And don't forget our Chief Justice, Jeff Bivens,
is
from Williamson County. You know, it's there was a time in state's history where regionalism was very important. When I first got here in the early 2000s, there was about two counties in West Tennessee that had a congressman, a lieutenant governor, Speaker of the House, and governor. But we're past that. We're past regionalism. I didn't grow up in Tennessee. Jack didn't grow up in Tennessee. Marsha Blackburn didn't grow up in Tennessee. So, yes, we live there, but our allegiance is to Tennessee, not to Williamson County.
Is there anything else, Leader, that I haven't asked that you think it's important for people to know in terms of expectations for the next legislative session? Anything else?
I think the most important thing that we forget, we look at Washington, D.C. Those, our senators represent 6.7 million people. Our congressmen represent 800,000 or more. Your state representative, you can pick up the phone and talk to them, and you can ask for a coffee meeting and talk to them. And so I would just urge everyone just to get involved in state government and talk to them, get to know them, talk to them, tell them what you think. We've got 27 new people in the House, which is about 27% new people. But these are sharp people. They are successful teachers, attorneys, and they may not know the procedures, but they are successful, and they will come up here on day one and do a very good job. All right. Thank you.
That was WPLN's Sergio Martinez-Beltran talking to incoming House Speaker Glenn Cassata. Keep up with WPLN's coverage of the state legislature this session by subscribing to the TriStar State. Find it at WPLN.org/TriStar or on your favorite podcasting app.